Hello and welcome to Bexhill's Brighter Brunch with me, your host, Lynn Watts. On this week's show, government unveils plan to cut NHS waiting list backlog, tens of thousands of extra deaths predicted as deadly weather pushes the NHS to breaking point, child sexual abuse inquiry chair urges the government to act, and Welby formally relinquishes his Archbishop role. In local news, Lancaster pilot from Bexhill dies at 100 years old. Early cancer detection is at the highest ever level. Fire crews tackle a blaze at a Horam derelict house. And surgeries could be bought to aid new centre plans. We'll be giving you some top tips on how to keep warm this winter. And we'll be going over to Tasmania, where Mark Ransley will have the latest for us from there. Hello. Now, the government has unveiled a new pledge to cut the list of patients waiting more than 18 weeks for NHS treatment in England by nearly 500,000 over the next year. The plan will expand to access to community diagnostic centres and surgical hubs, alongside reforms designed to enhance patient choice and tackle inefficiencies. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer said it would create millions more appointments and deliver on our promise to end the backlogs. The British Medical Association, that's BMA, has welcomed the plan but was sceptical about whether it could be delivered. The government has billed the plan as an important milestone in a broader effort to reduce the number of people enduring long waits for appointments, procedures and surgeries. Sir Keir added greater choice and convenience for patients, staff once again able to give the standard of care they desperately want to. A key Labour election pledge now included in the government's six main priorities is for 92% of patients to begin treatment or to be given the all clear within 18 weeks by the end of this Parliament. This has been an official NHS target for some time, but has not been met since 2015. Currently, only 59% of patients meet the 18-week target, with 3 million people waiting longer. The latest promise is to reach 65% by March 2026, which according to the government would reduce the backlog by more than 450,000. A network of community diagnostic centres which provide appointments such as scans and endoscopies in local neighbourhoods will extend their opening hours to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. The aim is to get patients treated more quickly, closer to home and without relying on hospitals. Officials say these centres will provide up to 500,000 extra appointments each year. GPs will also be able, where appropriate, to refer patients directly to these centres without requiring a prior consultation with a specialist doctor. Professor Phil Banfield, chair of the BMA Council, expressed doubt over whether the plan could be delivered. Doctors have been just as frustrated as their patients by the lack of facilities to deliver care and want to bring waiting lists down, he said. But the reality is that without the workforce to meet constantly rising demand, we will not see progress that we hope for. Prof Banfield's concerns were echoed by Dr Jeanette Dickinson, chair of the Council of the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges. We know that these things can make a difference. We know that these have been tried in small areas, piloted, and do make a difference, she told the BBC's Today programme. It's doing it at a pace and at a scale, having the staff available, having the estate available, the operating theatres, the consulting rooms, the capacity to deliver those changes. Ed Agar, Shadow Health and Social Care Secretary, said it was the Conservatives who revolutionised the diagnostic process by rolling out 160 community diagnostic centres. He said the government's plan is another announcement that makes clear after 14 years in opposition, the Labour Party have no new ideas of their own for the NHS, despite promising change. Well, they've not met a single manifesto promise yet, have they? Patients cannot wait for more dither and delay from the government, who promised so much and so far have delivered so little. Liberal Democrat MP and health spokesperson Helen Morgan said the plan for waiting lists could risk putting hip replacements over heart attacks unless the crisis in emergency and social care was addressed. And the NHS still. The NHS is bracing for a perfect storm as a deadly combination of freezing temperatures and surging winter viruses threaten to push the health service to breaking point. It comes as the Royal College of Emergency Medicine fears hundreds of excess deaths this winter due to A&E delays. The combination of emergency backlogs and the weather will pile additional pressure on Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer, who's already been criticised for cutting winter fuel payments to elderly people. He's been accused of deprioritising urgent and emergency care by focusing instead on reducing waits for planned operations. Well, of course, that's the ones that make him sound good, isn't it? Experts say the 10-day cold snap, which started last week, has threatened to push hospitals beyond breaking point, with increased cases of heart attacks, strokes and respiratory illnesses amongst vulnerable people. Doctors are warning of increased hospital admissions from heart attacks, compounded by the worst flu season in years and rising COVID-19 cases. Dr. William Bird, who's advised the government on weather-related health, said this winter has seen ideal conditions for viruses to flourish, from damp, cold weather trapping pollutants and viruses close to the ground to freezing temperatures that weaken immune systems. The current freeze-thaw cycle will also increase falls and fractures among the elderly. By the end of last month, there were almost four times as many patients with flu in hospital compared to last year, averaging 4,469 patients a day, including 211 a day in critical care. And some hospitals across the UK have declared critical incidents, with many operating at 94% capacity, far above the safe limit of 84%. Dr. Adrian Boyle, president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, said we're in an extremely difficult situation. Ambulances can't offload patients, waiting times are worse than ever, and hospitals are struggling to cope. This is the visible sign of the NHS crisis. The college calculated there were at least 14,000 unnecessary deaths in 2023 due to the emergency backlogs and believes 2024 will be worse. Dr. Boyd warned cold weather exacerbates heart problems within 2 days, strokes within three, and respiratory illnesses spike after 10 days, leading to increased deaths. The removal of the winter fuel allowance is likely to have left many older people unable to adequately heat their homes. For elderly people, room temperatures must be at least 21 degrees C to stay safe. With energy costs so high, many will save money and unknowingly put themselves in danger. Professor Carl Hennigan, an urgent care GP and director of the Centre of Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford University, said the rise in seasonal pathogens is predictable. Some years it's worse than others, but it happens on an annual basis. The government should be planning ahead for managing this, as well as hospital-acquired infections, to ensure we have enough people in urgent and emergency care to cope with the increased numbers coming in with complications from influenza-like illnesses. Why it does not do this, I just do not understand. He added the Health Secretary has advised people to wrap up warm, keep warm and keep the heating on. This is not appropriate when houses are so costly to heat at this time. Many people will be at risk, particularly those with heart and lung disease. Gregory Stafford, Conservative MP and former NHS executive, blamed government inaction. Cold kills and the government's complacency is unacceptable. Scrapping the winter fuel allowance could lead to the preventable deaths of up to 4,000 pensioners. Labour MP Rachel Maskell said, having consistently warned the government not to scrap winter fuel payments, I urge them, even at this very late stage, to make the payments to all pensioners this year while they find a long-term solution. Former Pensions Minister Ros Altman said the decision to take winter fuel payments away from the poorest pensioners just as fuel bills are rising and temperatures are dropping was utterly heartless and will undoubtedly cost lives. Well, this, of course, is what the government want. They don't want the elderly. We're a drain to them and they just want to get rid of us. It will mean more pensioners will not keep warm enough and become ill. This will all cause more strain on the NHS and social care services. A government spokesman said, we're supporting the NHS as it faces record pressures this winter. We've ended the strike, so for the first time in 3 years, staff are on the front line, not the picket line this winter. We've introduced the RSV vaccine for the elderly and vulnerable and immediately invested extra in the NHS. We've just announced investment of £711 million into social care alongside long-term reform of the sector through the Independent Casey Commission, but we're committed to reforming our NHS to break out of the cycle of an annual winter crisis to build an NHS that's fit for the future all year round. Let's have a little bit of music. Let's have an appropriate song here. Here's Mumford and Son with Winter Winds.
As the winter winds litter London with lonely hearts, oh, the warmth in your eyes swept me into your arms. Was it love or fear of the cold that led us through the night? For every kiss, your beauty trumped my doubt. And my hand told me. Time we were given will be left for the world. The flesh that lived and loved will be eaten by plague. So let the memories be good for those who stay. That I once loved was the same that sent me into your arms. Oh, and pestilence is won when you are lost and I am gone, and no hope, no hope will overcome. But if your strife strikes at your sleep, remember spring swaps snow.
Mumford and Son, like that band.
In need of a plasterer? What's Plastering provides affordable plastering, building and decorating services. Contact us today for a quote on 07 376 958 170 or email whatsplasteringservices@gmail.com.
Beachcombers Hair Salon, 79 Western Road, Bexhill on Sea, TM41DT. Telephone 01424 213 881. Professional skills and friendly atmosphere. Follow us on Facebook.
Don't forget to listen to Remember This with Charlie Watts for an hour every weekday evening from 5 p.m. Just remember that just one song can trigger a thousand memories, and you never know what you might hear. Only on Bexhill Radio.
Grab a cold beer, throw a few more prawns on the barbie, and join Mark Ransley all the way from Down Under for Tasmanian Tales Tall and True, Monday to Friday, 11 a.m, only here on BexhillRadio.com.
Stevie P, live only on Bexhill Radio. every Tuesday, 6 till 8, bringing you sounds of yesterday, today and tomorrow. Bexhill Radio, make it yours.
You are listening to Bexhill Radio, the free phenomenon of online broadcasting straight to your phone, laptop or any other device with an internet connection. Pre-recorded shows, live shows and special interest shows, broadcasting 7 days a week from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. Be part of the phenomenon. Bexhill Radio. Bexhillradio.com.
You're listening to Bexhill's Brighter Brunch with me, your host Lynn Watts, only here on Bexhill Radio. Now, Professor Alexis Jay, the former chair of a national inquiry into child sexual abuse, has called for the full implementation of the reforms set out in her 2022 report, which warned of endemic abuse across society in England and Wales. A campaign group chaired by Professor Jay called Act on IICSA said ministers must commit to a clear timeline to adopt the recommendations laid out by the independent inquiry, Child Sexual Abuse, that's IICSA. The government said it supports the changes. The group warned against politicising sexual violence and pushed back against misinformation. Professor Jay also distanced herself from calls from the Conservatives and Reform UK for a new inquiry into grooming gangs. The IICSA National Inquiry was set up in 2015 and carried out 15 investigations, including the grooming gangs and abuse in school and church settings. Prof Jay had previously led a landmark local inquiry into wide-scale abuse in Rotherham, where it was estimated 1,400 children were exploited between 1997 and 2013, predominantly by men of Pakistani heritage. The IICSA's final report was published in 2022 and set out 20 recommendations it said were necessary to reduce child suffering. They included setting up a National Child Protection Authority, implementing tighter controls on who can work with vulnerable children, legislating to force tech firms to take stronger action over online abuse material, and making not reporting abuse a criminal offence. In a statement issued on Sunday, Act on IICSA said politicising the issue of sexual violence fails to acknowledge its lifelong impact and hinders the implementation of vital and urgent overhaul to our systems required. Professor Jay said our mission is not to call for new inquiries, but to advocate the full implementation of their recommendations. A Home Office spokesperson said it was working at a pace across government to implement the report's recommendations. She previously said she was frustrated at the previous Conservative government's lack of progress in adopting the recommendations and described its response as weak, which the Home Office disputed at the time. Sakir Starmer is expected to defend his time as Director of Public Prosecutions, that's DPP, including giving the green light to prosecute those involved in grooming gangs in Rochdale and reorganising the Crown Prosecution Service to tackle grooming gangs. Well, he was the one who let Jimmy Savile go on for years and did try to hush as much as possible the Rochdale scandal. On Sunday, Act on IICSA also said recent media coverage of child sexual abuse had highlighted a troubling trend of misinformation that undermines the true scale of the crisis and the pressing need for reform. Health Secretary Wes Streeting said the government was prioritising getting on with implementing recommendations. Prof Jay's comments came after Tory leader Kemi Badenoch called for a national public inquiry into the UK's rape gang scandal on Thursday, which reform leader Nigel Farage also supports. The issue on grooming gangs was put back in the spotlight after Home Office Minister Jess Phillips rejected Oldham Council's request for a government-led inquiry into historical child sexual exploitation in the town in favour of a locally-led investigation. That decision was criticised by senior Tory and reform figures, while billionaire Elon Musk also fuelled online anger over the move in a series of posts on social media. Andy Burnham, the Labour Mayor for Greater Manchester, said he would support a national inquiry into grooming gangs, but stressed that a review into Greater Manchester Police, which he launched in 2017, was ongoing. "Nobody has turned away. We've faced up directly to the failings," Burnham said, adding that the review had led to arrest, charges and convictions. "For us, we must complete the Greater Manchester Review. The police investigations are ongoing and I wouldn't want anything to cut across those investigations, but I wouldn't stand against a further national review if it was deemed necessary. Well, I think it is necessary, actually, very necessary, particularly in view of what's going on in the Labour Party, because a Labour MP has been criticised for sharing a Twitter post telling Rotherham sex abuse victims to shut their mouths for the good of diversity. This is appalling and this woman needs to be sacked immediately. Naz Shah, presumably Naz stands for Nazi, Naz Shah, who represents Bradford West, shared and liked a post tweeted out from a parody account of newspaper columnist Owen Jones. It said, "Those abused girls in Rotherham and elsewhere just need to shut their mouths for the good of diversity." The 43-year-old later deleted her retweet and unliked the post, but she was criticised by the Equality and Human Rights Commission Chief Executive Rebecca Hilsenthrath, who said the MP should know better. She said, "We need to keep the victims of these horrific crimes at the heart of the debate and always remember that diversity is not served best by silence." Ms. Shah's comments came just days after she was attacking fellow Labour MP Sarah Champion for speaking out against the Rotherham sex scandal in article. In the letter published in The Sun, Ms. Shah accused Ms. Champion's comments of being blanket, racialised, loaded statements which stigmatised the Pakistani community. Well, I'm afraid they did that themselves with those sexual abuse of all those young girls. She added the article was irresponsible and set a dangerous precedent. Well, so are her comments. A spokeswoman for Naz Shah told the paper this was a genuine accident 8 days ago that was rectified within minutes. To suggest otherwise is nonsense. She has and will continue to advocate for all victims and work towards eradicating this evil from society. Ms. Shah was suspended by the Labour Party in 2016 for making anti-Semitic comments online. So why was she reinstated and why is she an MP and why has she not been forced to resign immediately? Now, Justin Welby, Archbishop of Canterbury, has symbolically laid down his ceremonial staff and relinquished his role. After spending little time in public since his resignation, he spent his final day leading the Church of England privately at his London base of Lambeth Palace. His duties will mainly pass to the Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell, until a permanent successor is appointed, a process that's expected to take several months. It comes as many important changes are being debated by the Church, including on safeguarding, the issue linked to Mr. Welby's resignation and one that has led to questions about Mr. Cottrell. Monday was the Feast of Epiphany in the Christian calendar and Mr. Welby attended two services at Lambeth Palace, a Eucharist and an Evensong. He resigned over the Church's handling of the sadistic abuser John Smythe, who recently published reports said perpetrated brutal sexual, physical and mental abuse against more than 120 boys and young men since the late 1970s. The report said Mr. Welby had personal and moral responsibility and that he could and should have done more in the case. After initially resisting calls to step down, he resigned on the 12th of November, saying he did so in sorrow with all victims and survivors of abuse. But in early December, abuse victims reacted with disgust at a short farewell speech he gave at the House of Lords, in which he makes jokes. Mr. Welby apologised the following day. Well, either these people have no brain, or they have no advisers. Mr. Welby did not give a Christmas Day sermon at Canterbury Cathedral and did not broadcast a New Year's Day message as he usually would. Lambeth Palace said he would not be giving any interviews. He has stepped down exactly a year earlier than expected. Some of his duties in London are carried out now by the Bishop of London, Sarah Mullally, and those in his Canterbury diocese by the Bishop of Dover, Rose Hudson-Wilkin. The bulk of his responsibilities will be carried out by Mr. Cottrell, who has himself faced calls to step down over his handling of an abuse case. Last month, a BBC investigation revealed that in 2010, days after he became Bishop of Chelmsford, Mr. Cottrell was told about multiple historical sex abuse allegations against a priest in his charge, David Tudor. He was also told that the church and local council had banned Tudor from being left alone with children. Mr. Cottrell said, "The situation with David Tudor was an awful situation to live with and to manage. I want victims and survivors to know that everything was done to understand, assess and manage the risk. But under Mr. Cottrell, Tudor twice had his contract in the senior post of area dean renewed. Well, why? And in 2015 was made honorary canon of Chelmsford Cathedral. This is disgraceful. Tudor was only suspended in 2019 when a new police investigation was launched. Archbishop Cottrell said he acted as soon as he was legally able to do so. Although he's taking on the duties of Mr. Welby, Mr. Cottrell will continue to be based at his Bishopsthorpe Palace in North Yorkshire. He's expected to be de facto leader of the Church of England until at least the summer. Well, we must never forget that the very founder of Church of England was an adulterer who got through six wives, two of them whom he had killed. The 17-member panel that will select the next Archbishop of Canterbury has yet to be formalised. For the first time, it will include five members based in the Anglican Church abroad. This tumultuous period for the church leadership comes at a time of threats that could fracture the church at both home and abroad. Domestically, the issue of blessings for same-sex unions has led to acrimony between different factions within the church. Though the option for members of clergy to carry out such blessings was passed in a vote at its National Assembly, many remain vehemently opposed to such a move, believing it to be against fundamental church teaching. But conversely, some have been upset that there have not been steps taken towards full marriage equality in the Church of England, giving gay couples the same rights in the church as heterosexual couples. Work on deciding what form a same-sex union blessing might take in the church is currently being worked on, and some progressives are concerned that the upheaval at the top of the institution may contribute to derailing that. There have been similar concerns voiced about work on racial justice and climate action, work that was being ushered through by the Archbishops of Canterbury and York. Well, personally, I don't see what any of the churches or organised religions have to do with God or good behaviour, quite frankly. Let's have a little bit of music. Let's have Nazareth with This Flight Tonight. We'll be right back. really like that one, Nazareth's there. So before we have local news, while we're talking about cold weather and winter, let's have a few of Bexhill Radio's top tips on how to help ensure that your elderly friends and relatives stay safe and well this winter. Get prepared in advance. Well before winter starts in future, it's wise to take a few precautions while it's still easy to get out and about, so wherever possible, stock up. Make sure the cupboards and freezer are stocked with plenty of good, nutritious, warming food for the winter, and when it's too cold or icy to safely leave the house, consider getting shopping online to be delivered to avoid any risk of falls and slips on a visit to the shops. If any repeat prescriptions will be needed over winter, make sure they're ordered in plenty of time because the bad weather can cause delays. And if an elderly friend or relative is susceptible to colds during the season, make sure there's plenty of cold and flu medicine in the house as well, just in case, and maybe even offer to go and pick up those medicines and prescriptions for them. The cold weather is likely to prevent people from venturing out, so make sure their home is cosy and safe for them to be in. Keep it warm. Keep it heated to at least 21 degrees C at all time if you have elderly or vulnerable people, and don't hesitate to turn it up if it still feels too cold. It's wise to ensure the heating system is in good working order before the weather gets too bad and have a qualified professional assess it, you know, sweep all chimneys in advance. But of course, with heating bills being what they are, and now that the wonderful government has stopped the heating allowance in their heartless fashion, it's important to take other tips to keep warm. With elderly or vulnerable people who aren't moving about a lot, why don't you get them a shawl to wear, a woolly hat in the house, and fingerless gloves? Fingerless gloves can really help increase the circulation to the hands, keeping them warm, and a lot of our heat escapes through our head, so a woolly hat can help trap that heat in and really keep their temperature warm. Layer up. As well as keeping an eye on the thermostat, keep a warm blanket to hand and wear multiple layers. It can really help to keep heat in. It's tempting to wear one big large cozy layer, but much better for heat retention to wear lots of thinner layers. Taking more time for self-care is very important through the winter. Make sure you eat well. Hearty soups, stews and vitamin-rich meals are good ideas. Not only is eating hot food ideal for keeping the body warm, but having a healthy diet is important to keep colds and flu at bay as well. The winter months can be tough on mental health, with dark afternoons and freezing weather preventing people from getting out and about, from seeing friends and keeping up with regular activities, many of which have to be cancelled because of the weather. It's important to make sure the winter daily routine features a few enjoyable activities. Whether it's watching favourite programmes, reading, or calling a friend on the phone. And nowadays you can do face-to-face Zoom meetings. It's really so much easier. So make sure there's a purpose and something to look forward to for each and every day. Now, when an elderly person is sitting still in a cold room for too long, they are at more risk of heart attack and stroke, or developing the flu, or developing hypothermia. And hypothermia is a dangerous condition that creeps up slowly but requires emergency medical assistance. Watch out for the initial symptoms. They can include a pale, cold skin, feeling like marble to the touch, shivering, feeling very tired, showing signs of confusion, slurred speech and rapid breathing. If you know someone who's showing signs of hypothermia, it's essential to dial 999 and get them urgent medical attention. So let's have some local news now. A war hero from Bexhill, who celebrated his 100th birthday this year, has died peacefully, his family told Bexhill News. Former Royal Air Force pilot Flight Sergeant Roy Oldcorn was aged just 20 when he was the pilot of a Lancaster bomber and was involved in Operation Manor, which flew tons of food in heavy bombers and to the starving Dutch in the occupied areas in 1944. A special 100th birthday celebration was held for Roy, who lives in Bexhill, at the Albatross Club in Channel View West in February, with family, friends and dignitaries in attendance. Roy flew several sorties to the area of Rotterdam, where he had to pilot his Lancaster at 300 feet and as slowly as possible by lowering the undercarriage and flaps to be able to drop the food to the people below. He also took part in other missions, such as repatriating POWs from Belgium and Italy. In recognition of his involvement in these operations, the Dutch military attaché, Captain Gerrit Mihanes from the Netherlands Embassy in London attended the party to present Roy a Thank You Liberator medal on behalf of the Dutch nation. Roy joined the RAF at the age of 19 and stayed until he was 23, having trained to fly Lancaster bombers in Canada. As Roy excelled in mathematics, it gave him an advantage and he was quickly selected to be a pilot. His daughter Karen told Bexhill News, "My lovely dad, Roy Arthur Oldcorn, has gone to fly higher. He died peacefully at St. Nectans, Bexhill, on Thursday the 19th of December. I was blessed to have him as a dad and to make lovely memories with him for so long." Roy leaves a loving wife, Sue. Now, the early detection of cancer in patients in Sussex has risen to its highest ever level, according to the NHS analysis. Of all cancer types, 59.9% diagnosed in Sussex patients was identified in an early stage between August 2023 and July 24, according to rapid cancer registration data. This was an improvement of 2.1% compared to pre-pandemic levels, which corresponds to around 800 additional patients diagnosed at an early stage. Dr. James Ramsey, Chief Medical Officer at NHS Sussex, said early detection means more patients have access to successful treatments like surgery, radiotherapy and immunotherapy, ultimately saving lives. The increased number of cancers being caught earlier follows a major drive by the NHS over the last 2 years to encourage millions of people to come forward. Among the initiatives is the innovative NHS Lung Health Check, Targeted Lung Health Check Programme and Liver Health Programmes. Since its launch in Sussex in June 2022, the Targeted Lung Health Programme has detected 137 cases of lung cancer, with nearly 75% identified at its stages where treatment can be offered with a view to cure. One of the people was 59-year-old Ginny Walker from Crawley, who received her invite for a lung health check in late November 2023. It came at a time when she was experiencing a chronic cough, and having lost her sister to lung cancer, she feared the worst. "I felt I had been a smoker, so I deserved it," she said. "But then I thought about my son, Oscar, and I knew I was going to take up the invite." The scan, performed in a supermarket car park, revealed a suspicious nodule, and further tests confirmed a cancerous growth. She underwent a lobectomy in March 24, which removed the tumour completely. As it was caught at stage one, she didn't need further treatment and is now cancer-free and has stopped smoking. Now, that is the biggest thing you can do to help yourself with health generally, not only lung health but heart health as well. Stop smoking. Ginny went on to say, "If you receive an invite for a lung health check, please just go for the scan. They won't judge you. Go for yourself and for your loved ones." Absolutely sound advice there from Ginny. Now, East Sussex Fire and Rescue Service were called at 7:23 on the 2nd of January 2025 to reports of a fire at a derelict building on the A267. At 8:30 p.m, three fire engines and officers were sent to the scene, which is near Horam Golf Club. Motorists were asked to avoid the area as a stretch of the 267 had been closed. Sussex Police assisted with traffic control. There was a lot of smoke in the area and locals were asked to keep doors and windows closed, but happily there were no reports of injuries. And two Bexhill doctor's surgeries could be bought by a council as part of wider plans to build a new medical centre in an East Sussex town. Rother District Council want to proceed with plans to purchase the freeholds of the Old Town Surgery and the Little Common Surgery in Bexhill. A report from the council officers state that the plans come as part of a deal to construct a new medical centre in Brooklands Road, which would be leased back to the NHS Sussex Integrated Care Board. To achieve this, the council would buy the two surgery properties and immediately lease them back to the GP partners. According to the report, the project could not proceed without this arrangement. The council said the arrangement would result in a financial return over the term of the leases, though the Little Common purchase would make a loss in isolation. A report to the council's cabinet said the purchase price of both properties would be less than the assessed market value. Little Common Surgery would eventually relocate to the new facility, while the Old Town Surgery would remain in place indefinitely, but initially on a 25-year lease, the council says. Well, before we go over to Tasmania to speak to Mark Ransley, let's have Al Stewart with On the Border.
The fishing boats go out across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds, turns the rifles into silver on the border. On my wall, the colors of the maps are running. From Africa, the winds, they talk of changes coming. The torches flare up in the night. The hand that sets the farms alight to spread the word to those who are waiting on the border. In the village where I grew up, nothing seems the same. Still you never see the change from day to day. No one notices the customs slip away. Last night the rain was knocking on my window. I moved across the darkened room and in the lamp glow, I thought I saw down in the street the spirit of the century, telling us that we're all standing on the border. In the islands where I grew up, nothing seems the same. It's just the patterns that remain, an empty shell. There's a strangeness in the air, you feel too well. The fishing boats go out across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds, turns the rifles into silver on the border. On the border. On the border. On the border.
Stevie P live only on Bexhill Radio every Tuesday 6 till 8, bringing you sounds of yesterday, today and tomorrow. Bexhill Radio, make it yours.
Call James for a no obligation quote at JJM Fencing and Landscaping for all your landscaping needs, fencing repairs or replacements in Bexhill. Check out My Next Door Reviews. Call 07491 707 019.
Tune in for The Rock Machine, Saturday at 10, Sunday at midday, with me, Lynn Watts, only here on BexhillRadio.com.
The Catch Fish Bar, the finest fish and chips in Hastings, 211A Bexhill Road, Bexhill. Telephone 01424 424 749. Thinking of selling your home? Call Bexhill Estates, Bexhill's most highly rated estate agent, for your free no-obligation valuation today on 01424 233330.
The old and new show presented by Women's Beer. Every weekday from 9 till 10 with interviews, news and guests. Only on Bexhill Radio. Make it yours. BexhillRadio.com.
You're listening to Bexhill's Brighter Brunch with me, Lynn Watts, only here on Bexhill Radio. Okay, so that was Al Stewart with On the Border. And I think Mark Ransley is ready for us on his border in Tasmania now. So good day, Mark. How are you doing?
G'day, Lynn. I'm doing just ducky, thank you. And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you,
Charlie,
as well.
And the family.
Yep.
Yeah, and Sid, of course.
Of course. Sid's asleep most of the time these days. He has a very short walk and goes back to sleep. So
Well, it was. When you say these days, that's all I've ever known him.
He's pretty lazy. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He's a senior boy now, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably how they lost the Armada, because if they all slept as much as Sid, then that would explain it.
That would explain it. Yeah. And like Sir Francis Drake would just come along and
absolutely
take a cannon or two through their ships and bang, they were while they're asleep.
And it's interesting because the leader of the Spanish Armada fleet was actually called Sidonia. So I reckon he was an ancestor. It's in the name, isn't
it? Say no more. Sidonia, Sid. It's a pretty close simile there, isn't it?
Yes, really. Absolutely. It is really. Anyhow, enough of this frivolity. What have you got for us today?
Well, I thought I'd give you a show on stupidity.
Oh, that's all right. We do that really well here on Bexhill Radio.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I'll start with these stupid hikers that come to Tasmania. Okay, they come unprepared, and they go, okay, well, Tasmania is not a very big place, but if you flatten it out with a hammer, it's just bigger than the mainland of Australia because of the height of all our mountains, you see.
Yeah, you've got some biggies. And,
yeah, I mean, that's an old wives' tale, so it's probably not true, but it's pretty big.
Yeah, pretty big.
It'll do till someone comes up with a better one, but you've got no idea that the number of numpties that have had to be rescued. I'm talking just over the Christmas and New Year break.
Wow.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
Oh, look, it's boggling. So we've had the two deaths, and one of them was a fall. Where they fall, you got no idea. The Federation Peak, it's called, and if you saw it, you'd think, what on earth is anybody doing thinking they can traverse that? It blows my mind. But what it does, apart from the cost of you know, rescuing these people and retrieving their bodies and all that stuff, and the expense with the helicopters and all the poor buggers who've got to go and search for these people. It's just there's no, they don't put figures on it. They don't say, okay, well, that one cost us this many, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands sometimes. They don't do it, and I think they should, personally. I think, as we discussed before, you know, like they should be saying, okay, this is what you need to take with you. Yep. You need an EPIRB, you need the correct clothing, you need warm clothing, you need the correct boots, you need all sorts of stuff, you know.
A Kendall mint cake to keep you going.
and some of grandma's pudding, you know, all that business, and away you go. Because I think the average Tasmanian is just getting sick of footing the bill for these idiots that
they should charge them. You know, if they ill-prepared and they don't carry everything on the list, or they climb somewhere beyond their capability, and maybe there should be published list of, you know, at each centre of the sort of skills you need, then they should give them the entire bill for the entire rescue, and that will make people think twice.
I could not agree more with you, you know, and so... Just watch this space, and I mean, like when I talk to you next week, there's probably going to be more because they see it's summer down here in Tasmania, and I think, oh, that'll be all right, you know, that'll be lovely. But the weather changes here so.
We know. I mean, I went out to you in the spring, and I saw every type of weather system, and in fact, sometimes we had three different weather systems in one day.
We left
Hobart in warm sunshine. We get to Dover and it's pouring with rain. And
you should go to Strawn. It's even worse. I mean, you don't like the weather, come back in 15 minutes, you know, because it might be totally different.
Well, I stood at the top of Mount Wellington, we'd sort of driven as far as we could and we'd just gone to the visitor centre, so we were quite safe. But I looked at the top of that and I thought, geez, you couldn't climb this. Because it was, I mean, I wasn't scared. It was wonderful. It was a beautiful view. But I really felt I was at the top of the world, and there's no way on God's earth I would have attempted to have climbed that. But you get idiots that do, I suppose.
Well, yeah, you do. Don't start me. But let's get off this. We'll go back to stuff that I know a bit more about.
Gets our blood pressures nice and low.
Then. We're getting on a bit now. We can't afford to do that. Yeah. But you know, back to Numpty. So the next generation of teenage lifeguards has just graduated in New South Wales, in the hope of reducing the number of drownings. And we've had, last I looked, it was a dozen drownings just over the Christmas New Year period in Australia.
Oh, goodness. Just over the Christmas period, 12.
Yeah. Yeah. And the vast majority are foreigners.
Yeah.
Again. So, and I'm really not being racist, but
they underestimate it. They don't know the culture.
Interestingly, a new study has shown that human beings are hardwired to be afraid of sharks, and it's quite interesting. So it's not just like having watched Jaws or someone's told you about sharks. It's a mammalian response to a threat. And it's quite fascinating. So, we've had three shark attacks this week, one fatal.
Oh, my goodness.
The other two are pretty nasty. But, again, back to the numptyism, I just made that word up, by the way.
That's very good. Numptyism is very good.
Thank you.
And do you inherit it? Do you have it thrust upon you, or do you have to work at numptyism? Which is it?
I'd say a proper numptyist would look at it as a learned response to stimuli, I'd say.
Yes. I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
but again, the one fatal one was a surfer, surfing in a known place where someone was killed there last summer, on the surfboard in exactly the same place. And they even go surfing at shark feeding times. In other words, I know.
They're offering themselves up, aren't they? Offering themselves up.
They are. So they go very early in the morning and and dusk and dawn. And that's exactly when the sharks are out hunting. It's where most species of fish hunt in those times.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid someone got killed by one. And it's like, for God's sake, it's like this is getting out of hand.
It's ridiculous. I mean, do they have warnings on the beaches where there are sharks, that there could be sharks in there?
They do.
There you are.
They do their best. They have shark nets which indiscriminately kill sharks, probably the wrong ones. There's no such thing as the right one. The shark and see something. Humans aren't shark food, but the sharks will the way they taste things is with their big gobs. So sometimes they go, no, that wasn't too good, and spit it back out.
But by then,
you pretty well had the biscuit, haven't you? Really. So,
but
I
then
don't
again,
know.
It's their home. It's their home. Well, they've every right to be there.
Anyway, so let's hopefully next week I haven't got another bloody tale for you. But
it wouldn't surprise me. There'll be another few bushwalkers dead and another few shark attacks. Because unfortunately we can never rule out numpties. And the more I get panicked, because now it seems that they've infiltrated our parliament and our cabinet as well. So anyway, that's
still
another story.
Picture a male funnel web spider.
Oh, God.
That's 9.2 centimetres long.
Oh, my God.
So if you think of a foot long ruler or anything you like, you use inches over there, don't you?
Yes. Well, I do anyway,
So it's a bit over, it's a bit over 5 inches.
Oh, that would be me, unconscious, on the floor. Dead. And also, I mean, huntsmen I could just about cope with because although they're huge, they're fairly harmless. But the funnel web is deadly, isn't it?
Oh, very. It's the most deadly bloody spider on the planet.
God.
But, you know, it's the average size of a pom's hand. You know what I mean? So,
and it can kill you with a tiny droplet of venom.
Yep. And so they're milking these things. How'd you like to be the milker? I won't call him the milkman, but the milker.
Like, I don't suppose they go up with a little stool and a couple of buckets, do they? Although the bloody thing's big enough.
I don't know. He's big enough, as you say. You see his toenails. But, anyway, so this big chap that they found, he's a world record, but they've called him Hemsworth. After Chris Hemsworth, you know, the Australian sort of superhero sort of fella.
Hemsworth.
Probably haven't heard of him, but he's a big time over here. But, I mean, I just can't get over it myself. It's like that's a one big lump of spider. I mean, there's smaller cats getting around.
Yes, there is. Well, you know what? If you had a bathtub, he couldn't go in your bath because his legs would overflap the sides, wouldn't they?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And,
they're keeping him, they're presumably feeding him because they're milking him for the venom so they can make anti-venom. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Presumably he's having quite a nice life because he sits around doing nothing and gets free food the whole time. So presumably he'll become less vicious, will he?
Well, they're feeding him seagulls and cockatoos, so we'll see how he goes.
God! Wow.
Well, sorry, that's just, I'm just wishing. That was my wishful thing.
Yeah, because you don't like either of those things. But
No. Seagulls, cockatoos and rats. But anyway, that sort of tickled me. And,
In the meantime, I'm afraid time has beaten us as always. However, it's been fantastic to catch up with you and we'll do it all again next week. But meanwhile, you've been listening to Bexhill's Brighter Brunch with me in the UK, Lynn Watts. In Tasmania, Mr. Mark Ransley. We're going to go out on Fleetwood Mac with You Make Loving Fun. So thanks for joining us. Catch us next time. Goodbye.
All right.
Believe.